This is a recording from the New Dominion Bookshop brought to you by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit us at www.cvillepodcast.com for more radio shows, features, and speeches. Rob Sheffield is a former resident of Charlottesville and a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine. On Tuesday, January 22, 2008, Sheffield read from his book, Love is a Mixtape, and answered audience questions at the New Dominion Bookshop.
I am going to read a part from the book, and then just gab a little bit, and we'll take it from there. But I want to read a bit. This is from when I first moved to Charlottesville, which was back in the 1980s, which was a long, long time ago. And yet at the time it seemed like as far as things could go and as awesome as things could be, and so 1989 really like fulcrum like pivotal year for me personally, and hence my insane nostalgia for 1989, which there's really no particular reason to be nostalgic about at all, but. That was the year that I moved to Charlottesville and met Renee, who this book is basically about. And a lot of you knew Renee, too, and someone who not forgotten after encountering. And I met her just a little further down on the mall at what is now Escafé, back Nescafe, Estate, whatever it was back then. It was the Eastern Standard. Might still be the Eastern Standard upstairs.
Not anymore.
All right. Things change suddenly. You know, I think by now it would be like a Pizza Hut or something, but at least it's like something now. And it was a bar, and it was across from. The drag bar in town, which did not have a liquor license, so the people from the drag bar would come over to buy their drinks at Eastern Standard. And so, like, Eastern Standard was just an always swinging and always fun place. And I was there for poetry reading, and happened to meet Renee there, and. And it all flowed from there. So this tape is from November 1989. Also, the format of the book is very simple. Just each tape comes with a story. It's basically mixtapes from my shelf, what they remind me of, who they remind me of. And this is a tape from 1989 called Sheena Was a Man. And if you remember 1989 and the hits of 1989, Sheena Was a Man, you may remember from Funky Cold Medina by Tone Loc, A Sensitive Tale of a Man and His Search for Love, and His Search for Love through Funky Cold Medina, which is the love potion that brings him to Sheena, who in one of the pivotal scenes of the song turns out to be a man. So, Sheena Was a Man from November 1989. Renee was my hero. Have you ever had a hero? Someone who says, I think it would be a good idea for you to steal a car and then drive it off a cliff, and you say, automatic or standard? That's what Renee was, a lion-hearted, take-charge Southern gal. It didn't take long for us to get all tangled up in each other's hair. One day that fall, we were driving around in her 1978 Chrysler LeBaron, and Gladys Knight's Midnight Train to Georgia came on the radio. Renee sang lead while I sang the Pips backup routine. She's leaving, leaving on the midnight train, leaving on the midnight train, woo woo, choo choo. When we got to the final fade out, Gladys is on board the train and the Pips are choo chooing their goodbyes. And Renee cocked an eyebrow and said, you make a good Pip. That's all I ever wanted to hear a girl tell me. That's all I ever dreamed of being. Some of us are born to be Gladys Knights, and some of us are born to be Pips. I marveled unto my Pip soul how lucky I was to choo-choo and woo-woo behind a real Gladys girl. Girls take up a lot of room. I had a lot of room for this one. She had more energy than anybody I'd ever met. She was in love with the world. She was warm and loud and impulsive. One day she announced she had found the guitar of her dreams at a local junk shop. I said, "You don't even play the guitar." She said, "This is the guitar that's going to teach me." We drove up Route 29 and she got the guitar. It was a great big Gibson Les Paul with stickers of the Carter family and the Go-Go's and Lynyrd Skynyrd plastered all over the case. We drove it home and spent the whole weekend kicking around the house as Renee sat on the couch, figuring out how to play her favorite Johnny Cash and George Jones songs. Unlike me, Renee was not shy. She was a real people pleaser. She worried way too much what people thought of her, wore her heart on her sleeve, expected too much from people, and got hurt too easily. She kept other people's secrets like a champ, but she told her own too fast. She expected the world not to cheat her and was always surprised when it did. She was finishing her MFA in fiction and was always working on stories and novels. She had more ideas than she had time to finish. She loved to get up early in the morning. She loved to talk about wild things she wanted to do in the future. She'd never gone 2 weeks without a boyfriend since she was 15. 2 weeks. I could do a year standing on my head. Before she met me, her wish list for the next boyfriend had contained 3 items. Older than her, I failed that one. Rural, I failed that one too. And no facial hair. I would have needed 6 months' notice to slap an acceptable sideburn together. I often took the bus to her apartment on Highland Avenue, where we drank bourbon and ginger ale, listened to the music we wanted to impress each other with, which eventually turned into listening to the music we actually liked. She was particular about her bourbon, winced if I forgot to put the ice cubes in before I poured. She'd hiss, "Don't bruise the bourbon." She was the first person on either side of her family to go to college, and she held herself to insanely high standards. She worried a lot about whether she was good enough. It was surprising to see how relieved she seemed whenever I told her how amazing she was. I wanted her to feel strong and free. She was beautiful when she was free. She could play a little piano, mostly hymns that she learned to play for her grandfather. They were tight. When he came home from the mine, she would rub lotion into his blackened hands. When he was on the dialysis machine, she would sit next to him and feed him Pringles. She had some of the scrip they used to pay miners in instead of cash to keep them in debt to the mining company. Her grandfather, like mine, worshipped FDR. Sometimes she would say romantic things like, "I feel like I've been rode hard and put away wet." I couldn't fully translate this. I was from the suburbs. I had no idea whether you're supposed to dry off a horse before you put it away somewhere. But if Renee was trying to make herself unforgettable, she was doing it right. Renee and I spent a lot of time that fall driving in her Chrysler, the kind of mile-wide ride Southern daddies like their girls to drive around in. She would look out the window and say, "It's sunny, let's go driving." Then we'd actually do that. She loved to hit the highway and say things like, "Let's open her up." Or we would just drive around aimlessly in the Blue Ridge Mountains. She loved to take sharp corners, something her grandpa had taught her back in West Virginia. He could steer with just one index finger on the wheel. I would start to feel a little dizzy as the road started to twist in funny angles. But Renee would just accelerate and say, "We're shitting in tall cotton now." We would always sing along to the radio. I was eager to be her full-time pip, but I had a lot to learn about harmony. Whenever we tried California Dreamin', I could never remember whether I was the mamas or the papas. I had never sung duets with another person before. She did her best to whip me into shape. "They could never be what she was, too. No, damn it, I'm Oates. I thought I was Oates. You started as Hall, you have to stay Hall." We never resolved that dispute. We both always wanted to be Oates. Believe me, you don't want to hear the fights we had over England Dan and John Ford Coley. Have you ever been in a car with a Southern girl blasting through South Carolina when Lynyrd Skynyrd's Call Me the Breeze comes on the radio? Sunday afternoon, sun out, windows down, nowhere to hurry back to? I never had. I was 23. Renee turned up the radio and began screaming along. Renee was driving. She always preferred driving, since she said I drove like an old Irish lady. I thought to myself, well, I've wasted my whole life up to this moment. Any other car I've ever been in was just to get me here. Any road I've ever been on was just to get me here. Any other passenger seat I've ever sat on, I was just riding here. I barely recognized this girl sitting next to me, screaming along to the piano solo. I thought, there is nowhere else in the universe I would rather be at this moment. I could count the places I would not rather be. I've always wanted to see New Zealand, but I'd rather be here. The majestic ruins of Machu Picchu, I'd rather be here. The hillside in Cuenca, Spain, sipping coffee and watching leaves fall. not even close. There is nowhere else I could imagine wanting to be besides here in this car with this girl on this road listening to this song. If she breaks my heart, no matter what hell she puts me through, I can say it was worth it just because of right now. Out the window is a blur, and all I can really hear is this girl's hair flapping in the wind. But maybe if we drive fast enough, the universe will lose track of us and forget to stick us somewhere else. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
After his reading, Sheffield took questions from the audience. An audience member asked when Sheffield had decided to write his book in this form.
Yeah, I always wanted to write about Renee and never found the form. Yeah. And had a lot of false starts and stops. And it took about 5 years to start. It was about 5 years ago. It was the fall of 2002, and I moved into my apartment, and I was unpacking my tapes. It was the first apartment. It had these old china cabinets built into the wall, like an old, like, 30s kind of house. And I, of course, I looked at the shelves, and I thought, place to put tapes, you know? Like, there was nothing else I wanted to put on there. So when I was unpacking the tapes, and it was really amazing, because every box, I was like, oh, these tapes, you know, from this spring, or these tapes from this summer. Every tape seemed to be like just screaming out, like, play me now, play me next, because I've got a story to tell. It just made me think about writing about the tapes, and really it just came out of that, you know, writing about Renee was something I'd wanted to do and had worried that I wouldn't find a form to do it, because there was just too much to say. Once I started writing about the tapes, it really just kind of all flowed out of that.
Another person asked if Renee had been a DJ on WTJU.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she was a ground rule double dutch. Yeah, she would have. Should have argued with this tape being in instead of that tape. She was on Thursday afternoons. She was ground rule double dutch, 2 to 4:30. I was on Wednesday and she was on Thursday, so that was nice. That was nice. 2.5 hours, or 2 hours, depending on the length of the news. It would fluctuate back and forth. It was afternoon, and and it's funny because, like, when you're, you know, boy DJing in the afternoon and you think in terms of, you know, like, you know, kind of snob appeal thing, but you think of, like, you know, impressing the listener and, like, you know, what, you know, really obscure, great unwashed B-side can I bust out that, you know, nobody will have heard before, and, you know, get really, you know, proud when people would be stumped. And Renee just, like, did not care about that stuff at all, and just loved music. Even, like, the most, like, I remember, like, one day she was listening to all my fall records, and, you know, I thought of the fall as, like, the ultimate, like, you know, boy, impressing boys kind of band, because, like, they have 40 different records a year, and nobody can keep track of them, and they're very abrasive and post-punk. She was like, I like them because they sound like the B-52s. I was like, they don't sound like the B-52s. And she said, yeah, because, like, the guitar just plays bump, 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 and the girls go, ooh-ah, ooh-ah. And she said, they just sound like the B-52s. So she would play that, and then she would play Loretta Lynn, and then she would, you know, she'd play whatever she wanted. I learned a lot from listening to her, but there was a lot about her approach to life that just learned from just being around her.
Another questioner wanted to know if it had been hard for Sheffield to write about the intimate details of his relationship.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. I'm definitely glad that I waited till I was ready, and that, like, that I was glad that I spent so long writing it, because by the time it came out, I definitely knew that I was ready. But I think when I began it before, I didn't know if it was too much or too revealing. It's funny because, like, writing about music and writing about the emotional aspects of the book. Again, like, being a boy, just the tendency is to just hide behind the music part of it, and that was kind of hard to, like, you know, I would have like a part where I would go off for 40 pages about some guided by voices song, and I would love that, but it was hard not to hide behind that, definitely.
One audience member asked whether Sheffield still made mixtapes or burned CDs, or had doing so lost its charm.
Yeah, I like tapes. I love, she will never know what a tape is. She will, like, she will never have any idea. It's really funny that, like once tapes kind of disappear, they kind of totally disappear. But I love MP3 playlists. I love to just make a playlist with 300 songs on it. I don't have to worry about making it fit. I love burning mix CDs. There's really no, like, musical format that I don't like. But you know, because I grew up with, like, the tapes, that particular format I love, and I still like to make them. It's funny, I got pulled out of that security line at LaGuardia this summer because I had a Walkman in my bag, and the guy was like, "What is this?" And like, one of the older security guards came over and said, "Oh my God, I haven't seen one of these in a long time." And then they were like, "How come you have an iPod and one of these in your bag?" And I was like, "Well, because I'm listening to James Brown and the Walkman. It just sounds better on tape." And I realized I was sounding very incriminating the longer I was talking about it. But, you know, I was wearing the pumps. They were in the little gray bin. So, like, I think if I'd had my pumps on, I could have argued more forcefully. Yeah, I guess dangerous. Now we know Walkmans are dangerous to carry through security checkpoints, but the tapes will never die. That's it. Just thank you so much for coming, and thank you so much for being part of this, and thank you so much to New Dominion for having me over.
You've been listening to Rob Sheffield reading from his book, Love is a Mixtape. The reading took place at the New Dominion Bookshop on January 22, 2008.